The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's. That's wrong.
Big time wrong. Welcome, folks, to the National Intel Report here on the 11th day of August in the year of 2023. And, folks, I would like to implore you, please go to republicbroadcasting.org, hit that donate button, look at all of the various ways that you can help, you know, with a monthly contribution, with a one-time contribution, whatever it is, it will go to good use to support and defend our right of freedom of speech, because it is rapidly going away, folks. I promise you, in so many ways. So let's stand up for one of the last bastions of free speech that we have. And that being said, today I'm most happy to have two of my old buds back with me for a program. We've done quite a few together over the years, buddies. And that would be, let's talk to the guy who's the farthest away first, and that would be Mr. Cal Robbins out there in Arizona, out there where it is nice and cool. How's it going, Cal?
It's going good. So I take it I'm the one that's the farthest out there. I'm way out there.
We're talking geographically, buddy.
Oh, okay, okay. All right. Yeah, but we don't need to.
Yeah, well, you're about farthest out there anyway. So, yeah.
I'm about farthest out there as it goes anyway, so, yeah.
How's the weather?
It's actually kind of muggy, hoping to get some monsoons.
Oh, it's about time for monsoon, isn't it?
Well, it's past time.
Oh, it's late this year, huh? Usually, I remember in Tucson, it was usually late July, early August, for sure. Yeah. You had the monsoon.
Yep.
Well, then let's jump to the good retired commercial airline pilot from there in Sweet Home, Alabama. How are you, DW?
Oh, we're doing real good in Bama land here. It's been about 90 degrees all day and 100% humidity, so you need air conditioning. it's pretty
Yeah, you air jockeys complain about everything.
I know. That's how that's kind of like an old joke. How can you tell the difference between a jet engine and an airline pilot? Well, if you ask the flight attendants, the difference between an airline pilot and a flight attendant is that the engines quit whining after you shut them off. You know, and
okay, all right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And well, guys, today we are going to embark on what I think is a very crucial understanding of America, and of course that means that most everyone doesn't want to hear about it, but it is something I think that needs to be brought out there. And the topic for today's program is, when did America first become a Marxist country? And I have my ideas, I know you guys have yours, and I'm going to be the good host. And I'm going to let Mr. Cal Robbins out there in Arizona, I'm going to let him go first. Hit that unmute button, buddy.
There we go. Oh, this country laid the tracks of socialism / communism, Marxism, in 1787, 1788, when they wrote and ratified the Constitution.
Interesting viewpoint. I know that there were some socialists definitely at the Constitutional Convention, the Jewish Alexander Hamilton leading the charge. And there are, you know, and then we have to remember how many Freemasons were there as well. I see that.
Mike, if you add in taxes, I mean, yes. Isn't that part of the Communist Manifesto is progressive income taxes?
Yeah, I think that's
the power to do that is laid in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. Another plank of the Communist Manifesto, I believe, is control of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, the power to regulate trade between the states. I don't know what else you would call that, but the power to regulate the economy. So you've got just those two right there.
Interesting point. I would certainly agree with you that they laid the foundation and put in the necessary parts to create the monster in 1787. But very interesting viewpoint, Cal. DW, your turn.
Yeah, I appreciate what Cal said. I don't really take any exception to what Cal said. That period of time in that event called the Constitutional Convention, and then subsequently what comes out of it, progresses out of it, is taking those values, that authority, that central control, and legitimizing it through constructs of law. Now, this was done over an extremely long period of time relative to one man's life. But you can see from that point forward a progression and a series of steps descending to a the present situation. Now, I wouldn't argue against what Cal said. I just want to add to it a little bit here, with the idea that in the different colonies, and those would have been the British American colonies, going all the way back into the 1600s. Early 1600s, that communism or everything that you would identify as communism was already present in the culture and the laws that the burgesses use. You know, it's funny to me, Mike and Cal, that when you listen to a lot of people talk about American history, it seems like it starts in 1776.
You know? Yes,
and sure. they're completely void of any perception that anything took place between the Virginia Company in 1776. Nothing happened in there. You know. And but when you study that at length, you find out that many of the characteristics of those communities, and they were varied. There was a variety, and they were varied, and you had the local communities and charter companies, when you study their bylaws and how they lived in their communities and their culture, they were communal in a very most communist sort of way. So that's something I think that has escaped the minds of most people.
Well, buddy, for both of you, I want to throw out another ism. And let's see, I would like to get your thoughts on this. And I absolutely believe that the Constitutional Convention of 1787 produced the ism I'm about to talk about. It's not socialism, it's not Marxism, it's not communism, but it is positivism. Now, are either of you gentlemen familiar with that phrase?
Yeah.
Well, explain your beliefs or your understandings of what you think positivism is, DW.
Well, it. I don't pretend to be some sort of scholar on the idea or the subject, but in the age of enlightenment, in the age of reason, this is positive. I can't even really say it. Positivism. This is the act of man creating those laws associated with enlightenment and the age of reason. And I think there was a book, Rationalism. Rationalism. Is close to that subject. So
let's let old Cal jump in here. I'm sorry. Yeah. But just to lay the foundation here, Cal, what do you know about positivism?
Positivism is a philosophy of, I guess you would call it, it's a rejection of, I guess, mysticism or religion or fanaticism in religion.
Well, I would like to throw my definition of positivism out there, and this is something I don't think a lot of people think about. Positivism is the Constitution certainly established this, and that was that whatever the government says, whatever the president, whatever the Congress declares, whatever the president signs, whatever the courts agree with, is law regardless of the morality. They do, under positivism, laws do not have to in any way meet a moral standard. So Cal, your comments on that? Mute button, buddy.
Looking for mute button.
There you go.
Phone gets hungry at times. I can understand that. But now we're up against who's going to define what the morals are. Which whose morals are people going to live by?
Well, I agree with that. But the problem with positivism is morality is never even considered.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah.
Anybody's morality.
Yeah, if you're using positivism as whatever the authorities say is so, or is law, or whatever they say is so, if that's positivism, I don't want anything to do with it.
Well, Cal, I remember it when I lived out in Colorado. We had a representative. And he made that statement in a public meeting that no law will ever be unconstitutional until the Supreme Court says it is. And then I asked him about the morality of the law. He didn't want to talk about it. So I think it's inbred into the people. It's something that has happened. We live in a society to where the final arbiter of what is and what is not legal is 9 unelected, politically well-connected lawyers. And that was created by the Constitution.
Intentionally created.
Yes. Now, I find it really interesting. This was one of the things I was looking at and talking with some people about. And that's the fact that Luther Martin, who was a delegate to the convention, the longest sitting attorney general in the history of this country, 30 some years as the Attorney General of the state of Maryland, he was initially tasked with writing the Supremacy Clause. He put 2 things into that Supremacy Clause that I believe hinges and takes us a little bit more towards that crazy lie that we've heard repeated all our lives, we the people, because we the people had nothing to do with that Constitution. But here is the point, you know, that I look at. Luther Martin put two things in the Supremacy Clause. Number one is that the Supreme Court could never overrule a state's decision, a state Supreme Court decision, unless there were two states that disagreed. They could, they did, they had no jurisdiction at that. The other thing he put in there was that the Supreme Court, in all of its cases, would have a sitting jury of the people. And the Supreme Court would present the case and render their opinion, then the people would vote on it. And, you know, suddenly these points, when Luther Martin and John Francis Mercer get upset with the process at the end of August in 1787 and go home, you know, and the other thing was is that the I'm trying to think exactly what it was right now, but he put there were three provisions, not two, that were really questionable. And, you know, today's world would say it was questionable. It should have been left in there. But suddenly after they leave, the Committee of Style and Arrangement goes through and all of those things disappear. Now, why do you think they would not want the Supreme Court to have a jury listen to their cases and then the people would rule on the Supreme Court's decision? That would actually establish more of a we the people government, would it not? DW?
Exactly. Just go back just a little bit to answer the question on this positivism. The creators are the arbitrators, and so we're seeing this expressed in its full manifestation now, because they can do it with impunity. Their impunity comes from the fact that they are appointed for lifelong terms, and they're beholden to the system that they supposedly are supposed to stand in judgment of. So this this exposes another fallacy, a mythical childish wishism that there's a separation of powers. The federal Supreme Court judges could never objectively analyze or sit in judgment of the system that they're beholden to. There might be the occasional case here and there, and where it appears that it's been a win for I won't call them the people, the public, but as a whole, they're there to legitimize, validate, and then push forward a continuity and the consolidation of power over a very long period of time.
Well, DW, so, what I thought of as you're stating that, pardon my interruption, but yeah, it just popped in my head was exactly to match that was the Heller v. D.C. decision on guns, Second Amendment. And when Scalia wrote the majority opinion, and, you know, of course, he puts in the first paragraph that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right and not a collective right. Well, immediately, the majority of people in this country had an orgasm. I mean, you know, the Second Amendment folks. I mean, you know, look what he did. Oh, yes, it's an individual right. But they didn't read the rest of the document. Ah, we got music coming on. We'll be on the other side, guys. Thank you.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
To the National Intelligence Report here on the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org, your path to freedom of speech, and the open window of freedom of speech. Let me use that phrase. But to jump back to that decision that I was talking about before the break, and that was Heller versus D.C., a decision that people just absolutely thought was the, you know, Scalia was God. Because he had said that the Second Amendment is an individual right. But then, later in his decision, he establishes precedent. And they are good for this. I mean, very good for throwing you a bone and then snatching it back. And then establishing precedent, which other black robe bandits can cite later on. And this is what he said. All individual rights are subject to reasonable restrictions. Now, people, the problem is that you don't get to decide what's reasonable. They do. And now we're seeing that because our friend, you know, the friend that's all of us know, Cody, from Illinois, and Cody sent me today that the Illinois Supreme Court has struck down, I mean, has backed up the assault weapons ban. On the amendment that says shall not be infringed. But would you be surprised, I haven't read the decision, but would you be surprised, Cal, DW, if they cited in there
that every individual right is subject to reasonable restrictions, and they think it's reasonable to tell you you can't have guns? DW, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think that that's already been stated. If not, I think it was inferred by Scalia, but it's been openly and directly stated in I'm making this statement here, and I can't back it up with who said it, but I believe I heard somebody from California in Congress say this this year, that it's all of it can be interpreted through the implied powers of the federal government. So,
well, you might be talking about Nancy Pelosi. She says all kind of stuff, even when she's sober.
Well, you can. It's a little bit of a red herring of sorts. There's a lot of substance to this line of conversation, in that the Administrative Procedures Act in the late 40s brought in all the agencies. Prior to that, there were no such thing as agencies, and the agencies take what is law by lawmakers, the creators, the arbitrators, and these agencies that are only quasi-government, so to speak, a parallel system, then interpret and then apply it, like the Bureau of Land Management, like the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Trying to remember, Cal and Mike, the agencies number in the hundreds, so they can make their own laws. Agencies completely unelected, unappointed, even assuming that their government had any validity to begin with at all. But these agencies are their own bodies. They do what they want with those authorizations. Like the Congress authorizes certain laws, and then the agencies interpret them and apply them. This is me speaking. They apply it arbitrarily, and I think BLM is probably one of the best indicators of that. So,
DW, here's something I was thinking about. What's the difference? And then, Cal, I want you to jump in. What is the difference between an agency and a committee?
Oh, well, you and I could have a committee.
What if the president gives us the authority as a committee to make decisions?
Right. Well, that would be an executive privilege or authorization from the executive of that corporation called the United States, and the findings that would come out of that committee would be applicable. Yep. To that government of the United States, and not the general public.
Well, we're almost at break time, and Cal, we're probably going to catch your response on the other side of the break. I don't want you interrupted, buddy. And here's the break now. Cal Prescient. So we'll come back with Cal on the other side. Thank you, folks.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the funding behind the transgender movement to firsthand memoirs of World War II previously inaccessible to English-speaking audiences. We publish books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo. Whether you count yourself as a political dissident, student of history, connoisseur of philosophy, or enthusiast of exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you owe it to yourself to check out our catalog. With exclusive offerings like The Transgender Industrial Complex, Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more, there's something for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out our catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com and use code RBN Readers 2023 for 10% off your order. That's RBN Readers 2023 at antelopehillpublishing.com.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
I've got to take a little time. Little time to think things over. I better read between the lines in case I need it when I'm older.
Between the lines. Welcome back to the National Intelligence Report. Every time somebody says read between the lines, I think of the conversation between Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson, when Jefferson asked Hamilton, could you please show me where in the Constitution that there is authorizes a national bank? And Hamilton told Jefferson, you've got to read between the lines. And Jefferson's response was, I looked. There ain't nothing there. I love that one. Cal, you want to jump in on the previous conversation? Buddy, it's your turn.
There's the mute button. Sure. I think a real great example of what you're talking about, you know, with the agency, regulatory agency, crafting what amounts to be law through their regulations would be the bump stock ban by the ATF. That's totally made up whole cloth by the BATFE. Is that their official moniker? Of alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and explosives. That is a regulation that came from an agency, an infringement upon a person's natural right to bear arms. And that would be an example of it. And that was actually, if you've ever seen that video where Trump, where he makes his famous quote of take the guns first, due process later. Prior to that, because this is a cabinet meeting, so he's got Democrats and Republicans in this cabinet meeting, and he tells the Democrats in that meeting, he tells them, don't worry about going after legislation about bump stocks. I'll get that taken care of through my administration. And he did. So that's what we're up against, and the people don't want to see it. Did I lose you?
Were
there?
Oh, no.
I've always thought my thought is that when you say the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, that would make a great name for a convenience store.
I agree.
Right. Go ahead, DW.
Right. Well, I appreciate so much what Cal, that was just a fantastic example of what we're talking about here. Agency as it applies to this Leviathan called the federal government. There is actually a very precise and specific term for what you just described, and it's called, for the trivia people here, it's called non-positive law. Non-positive, and it's arbitrarily issued forth, and they don't even need to use notice and comment in order to do it. And interestingly, what you're finding, I'll give you another example of this, is when the CDC, working with the federal health agency, issued their mask and plandemic, kill shots, mandating these things. This was non-positive law, and it wasn't passed in the form of positive law, which is put in the statutes at large. It was relegated and delegated for agencies to interpret and act upon that, and in combination with the WHO, the CDC, and other governmental agencies issuing edicts and decrees and mandates that had never been through notice and comment. So I know that this is uncomfortable, and quite frankly, boring for a lot of people, but it's this ignorance of how they pull off their presumptions of legitimacy that allows them to act like dictators. And then we protest looking for other experts to, well, where are the experts on this? Okay. Now, if some retired old redneck airline pilot hillbilly understands that they're breaking their own rules, why don't all these high-powered lawyers, Mike and Cal?
Oh, they know. They.
Oh.
They know. They know exactly what they're
not to say anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, and guys, I can't wait to get him on one of our programs. I would like you guys to join me, but that's my old buddy Oscar Stille. And Oscar and I were talking this week, just a general conversation, and he was telling me how the federal courts control lawyers. And it's very surreptitious the way they go about it. But if you go into a court and challenge the government, I mean an open big-time challenge, you'll end up like Oscar did. You'll end up in prison for 15 years. And he says that the courts manipulate the attorneys very easily because they remind them, if you bring a case before the courts to where you're expecting a big settlement, we'll make sure you don't get it. Because here's the thing, and most people don't know this, is that let's say you sue ABC George over here, and you sue him for $500,000, and let's say you get $600,000, and the court awards you that. Well, the thing of it is that is appealable. The people who were told they had to pay a $600,000 fine, that is appealable. And so they appeal it, and then the judges, the courts, again, have the prerogative of saying, okay, that $600,000 was too much, we'll give you $15. So Oscar says that lawyers are told, if you cross the government, when you get one of these mega settlements, you know, if you sue somebody and they appeal it, you ain't going to get nothing, buddy. Now, most people are not privy to that, and that is one reason I would love to have Oscar on, and I want you two guys to be with us. He knows the inside track on this stuff because he's experienced it. Because here was a man who challenged the federal government every time he went to federal court, challenged them on their constitutionality, challenged them on every point. And the thing of it is, Oscar is Mensa. I mean, he's got an IQ of 180-something. And so he could just really take them apart, and the federal government finally didn't like it. So they charged him with income tax evasion and unconstitutionally moved his case from where he lived in Arkansas way over to the western part of Oklahoma, and then gave him 15 years when the average time for manslaughter is 10. And so they taught, they were going to teach Oscar a lesson, and Oscar is stubborn. And he's still fighting the system, and I give him all the praise in the world. But he served 10 years on a nothing charge because he challenged the federal government. And what an example that is for other lawyers. Other lawyers know this. They know it very well. So that is one thing I hope to do. But we're kind of jumping track here. DW, if I may, would you inform our listening audience what was happening in Europe in 1848?
Well, you have a communist revolution through a majority of the kingdoms and nation states in Europe, France, Germany, Belgium. And this is instigated by the radicals, and the manifesto that they're following is written by Karl Marx and Mr. Engels, and these are the provocateurs and instigators of a socialist revolution. it's particularly virulent in Germany, or the Prussian states as they were. Germany as such didn't, a consolidated Germany didn't really exist at this time. It was a series of different states, principalities, the Prussian states. And the long story made short is that they lost. They jumped the gun on their revolution. And Karl Marx's idea was that, the interesting thing about Karl, Heinrich, the Jew, he and Engels both believe that they can institute these cultural, governmental, and religious changes by revolution. They were revolutionaries. And so they wanted to impose these things and bring forth this communist new age through revolution, and they lost. A lot of it had to do with the Germans were the German Prussian states were quite good at beating these people down. and they were defeated. A lot of them, literally, I would probably be conservative if I said 100,000 of them, after having been militarily
too conservative,
defeated, left for America and other parts of Europe. A lot of them ended up in England. There was any number of them went to England, Britain, which was a safe ground for a communist. England's always been safe ground for a communist. And a large number of the rank and file and the military and political leaders of that Marxist revolution in Europe in 1848 ended up in America. And
in the northern states.
Yes, and the upper Midwest.
Yes.
Wisconsin, Illinois, and these areas, with major consequences to come about through that 12 years later. And so.
Well, Cal, what did they form when they got here? What you've read Wiedemeyer. Wiedemeyer is a great, you know, you pass that around to a lot of us. And Wiedemeyer was one of the leaders of all of this. When they got here, when these Marxist friends of Karl Marx, personal friends of Karl Marx, when they got to America and then went into the northern states and Midwestern, as, you know, I still consider the Midwest north, if it's north of, you know, the Mason-Dixon line. But anyway, what did they do once they got here, Cal?
They started a whole bunch of newspapers and took over newspapers that were already in existence at the time. They almost completely dominated the press after a few years.
And then they started their own social organizations known as communist clubs. Am I correct?
Yes, they did.
I mean, they were out in the open with their communist clubs. And here's the thing I don't think most people understand is when they took over the North, they were sure and positive to take over two especially critical branches. And that was the churches and the schools. They took over the churches with transcendentalism and Unitarianism. I mean, Theodore Parker was preaching abolition, but he was also preaching that you are your own God, people. There is no Christ. There is no God except you. You are your own God. That was transcendentalism, and that was the people who were supporting abolition because they needed – these people are not dumb. They knew they needed moral high ground somehow, an emotional issue to where they could appeal to the people. Cal, you want to continue, buddy?
Well, they took over the schools, they took over the churches, they took over the press. They formed their communist clubs, and that communist club kind of morphed into what we know now as the Republican Party in, was it, not Racine, Wisconsin. It was
Ripon.
Ripon. Yeah,
Ripon, whatever. Okay.
Ripon,
thank you.
Ripon, Wisconsin. Yes. And that's what the communist clubs basically became, was the burgeoning of the Republican Party, which then it absorbed the Whig Party. And they showed up in 1848, started filtering in by then. Within a couple of years, there's probably over 500,000 former socialists from Europe now living in the upper Midwest states, taking over the schools, the churches, the press, the political parties. And it had dire consequences to where, by 1856, within 8 years, they can field a presidential candidate.
Yes.
With an avowed socialist, John C. Fremont.
Yes, correct. And so, also, I think we would be remiss here if we didn't mention the fact of their good old buddy, Charles A. Dana, and Horace Greeley. And the New York Tribune, which was the most widely read newspaper in America in 1860. And this newspaper featured as their lead editorialist Karl Marx. Marx produced over 5,000 essays, some with his name, some just anonymous. But over 5,000 essays during this period of time in the North was coming from the most widely read newspaper that was out there. Your thoughts on that, D.W.?
Oh, yeah. he actually complained that Horace Greeley wasn't paying him enough.
And, he was giving him five bucks an essay. Come on.
Well, come on. That's about $5 more than that trash was worth. But, he was.
I think we got some music. We got some music coming up, buddy. Hang on. We'll get on that on the other side.
Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Soon you will be dancing face to face with the limits of ambition and the scars of the marketplace. Welcome to the land of flame and fizz, where you will learn that packaging is all that heaven is. Got the little black car, the little black dresser, got the guru on the trailer and the full course dresser, got the software, hard drive, CD-ROM, we got the exploitation.com.
Welcome back, folks, to the National Intelligence Report here at RBN. And folks, go to RBN.org and help us keep the truth flowing through the veins of America. They are in desperate need of this transfusion. So help us with that. DW? you were talking before the music and the break, sir. Would you continue?
Yeah. So during this period, as Cal said, they had the they had taken control in the Northeast, Upper Midwest. Well, you know, this Iowa, and Minnesota too is a territory. Michigan, yeah, Ohio, very important. They've taken control of local governments, and because they're very organized and politically motivated, and they also, it's interesting, don't you find that these communist refugees from the communist revolution in Europe of 1848, within a very short period of time, are so organized and then have the capital to
wonder where that came from.
Yeah, it's always fascinating, isn't it? How do these refugees seeking asylum, and if you were seeking asylum, why would you come here? You know, but anyway, they have the capital and the organizational skills to dominate media, the printed word, and then with the churches. Now, they also, with this moral high ground, religion and politics are not separate, and so they understand that with this, to give the appearance of a moral high ground, they find a cause du jour of the day, which is finds its way into the newspaper, and also the New York World is a highly read newspaper as well. It was called the World, and in those papers, in the editorials, you'll find a lot of conversation about Dred Scott, this is a slave that is in the contest of slavery as associated with a northern state and a southern state, a southern owner, and this court case goes on, this litigation goes on for like 10 years.
11.
Or more. Okay, I was close.
You were very close.
This is a constant pinata they can beat to keep people morally focused.
Well, DW, if I may, mentioned money. How in the world did a slave named Dred Scott keep this case in the court for 11 years?
Well, you must be reading my mind, because that was the next thing I was going to say. So where does a down and
well,
out?
Well, here comes the music, guys. We'll be back on the flip side. Yeah. Sorry, DW. We'll be back.
Right. It's the least we can do for the red, white, and blue. We must take America back. We must take America back.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available, and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.